Well, I am David Gregorio. I'm the director of the Graduate Public Health Program at the University of Connecticut. I am on the National Board of Public Health Examiners. I chair the MOC committee. Molly Eagleson is behind in the back, one of the participants in this project. Recently gone from the National Board, but not forgotten. This is a project that we thought was important to do because it addresses an important question that we in public health have relatively little information on, namely, how does the public health workforce prepare for its work? And the answer, by and large, is that it is a sporadic and not a linear preparation for a career that typically occurs on the job. At least in Connecticut, I know that people apply for civil service positions. They may end up in the Department of Transportation. They may end up in the Department of Public Health. And depending on where they land, they will do on-the-job training and preparation and become, you know, quite skilled in their area of expertise, however narrow that might be. And so we thought that using the maintenance of certification opportunity from the National Board of Public Health Examiners, we would begin to gain some insight into how people in the profession, particularly leaders in the profession, are attempting to maintain their qualifications and credentials. How many people, if any, are CPH in this room? Okay, there's a couple of you. I unfortunately don't qualify, even though I'm on the board. I was never trained in public health. Like many of you, I learned the work on the job. So we're going to give you some information about how competencies of individuals are maintained. And equally important, I'm hoping that several of you are able to contemplate and actually initiate continuing education activities. One of the things that we are woefully in need of is the opportunities to provide continuing education to the workforce. Okay, now that's not what I want to do. Okay, I guess I have no financial obligations. So CPH in a very brief history. We were incorporated as a board in 2005 as an independent organization intending to offer certification of individuals through a voluntary examination. That effort has continued to today and is on a good footing to continue for many, many years in the future, we hope. The CPH exam, for those of you who are not have not sat for it, is a knowledge test of the five core disciplines of public health and seven cross-cutting areas that have been highlighted in ASPH core competencies formulations. The first exam occurred in 2008. There were 577 individuals who earned CPH as a result of that training, or as a result of that examination. The National Board concluded that the first 2 years of status in CPH reflected, on the basis of the evidence of having passed, reflected sufficient ongoing capacity and credential that very little, if anything, was required of someone the first 2 years they earned CPH. The following 2 years, they were required to earn 50 recertification credits. So we're going to look at the time period from 2010 to 2012 when this charter class was required to get certification in public health CE credits. It's an online system that required individuals through a paper and pencil effort to report activities related to maintenance of certification and the submission of a $95 fee, which essentially covers the cost of keeping track of everyone. These are the things that individuals could submit as eligible activities. We began with an extremely generous model of what would qualify for CE. We did it for two reasons. Frankly, we did not know what to include and what not to include. We relied on a number of other certification organizations and found out that they had this kind of breadth of opportunities and experiences. And secondly, we certainly didn't want to discourage our classes from submitting information and thought that by casting the widest net, we'd get the most information about what, again, what our professionals are doing to maintain their credentials. You'll notice one important thing, though, on this list, the non-compensated public health service. We felt it was really important to bridge the academic and practice world and allow people to amass 20 of the 50 credits by engaging in public health activity other than, bless you, work that they're doing in the course of their practice. So you can have non-compensated public health service. And, you know, really we were thinking about all the individuals in academic jobs who we were trying to encourage and recognize for efforts they do on the basis of, on behalf of the practice of public health. So these are kinds of the arguments that have been put place, why CPH certification is important, and they correspond with why we think maintenance of certification is important. We not only think that it helps distinguish the profession, but it helps distinguish individuals from other people. If this really is a health profession, we should be expected to engage in the same kinds of activities as other health professionals do. And so I want to tell you what we observed from this first class and perhaps identify some opportunities for you to think about in terms of offering CE credits for these cohorts that are coming down the pipe now. What we found as of June 30th was that 286 of the 577 people who were CPH had submitted sufficient information for documenting CE activity. Since June 30th, we're now well over 80% of the cohort has earned maintenance of certification. So we think that particularly for this first group, it seems to be a sustainable activity that people not only sat for the exam, but want to maintain that credential. They reported about 2,500 actual activities based on those eligibility domains, or about 9 per person. So we're finding that the very earliest phases that people are committing to a variety of activities, some of which I think you'll see as more relevant to actually the acquisition of contemporary skills, and others which are just sort of maintaining what they do. Most important, the most common report by 81 individuals was attending a conference like this. And so when MOC requirements come along, note it that you were here. We offered a CPH webinar for individuals, and 52 individuals participated and indicated that experience, and for which they were given CE credits. 26 individuals reported some kind of public health related publication or a presentation, another 17 individuals. Just to give you an idea of who is CPH, who are the CPHers, in the group, like much of our field, there's a 2-to-1 female-to-male breakdown, and that exists not only for this first cohort, but for all of the subsequent cohorts, too. So what did we find? We found that the people who are maintaining certification, reflecting the people who took that first exam, tend to be rather young. There are about almost 3/4 of everyone who submitted recertification materials had been working for less than 10 years in the field. And that only about 8% of them had been working 20 years or longer. So it, you know, we're targeted and we're hitting the group we want to hit, those people who are developing their careers and helping to prepare them to be qualified in the work that they eventually pursue. We have reasonably good diversity in this group. We've got a third of the group that does not report themselves as being white. And that's, you know, we're satisfied but not content with those proportions. And when we ask them about their fields of specialization, you see that it's all over the place. The most common report is only 15% of people who say they are in the field of epidemiology. Otherwise, these are, you know, these are the percentage of respondents in that first cohort that reported. So we're capturing people across the spectrum of public health. Where do they work? Well, about a quarter of them work in academics. Small portion, only 4% work in business. A third of them report government employment. 14% are unemployed. And 11% work in non-governmental organizations. Most individuals are working either locally or at the state level. And in terms of the domains of activities that they reported on, you'll see that about 60% reported that they completed activities that focused on one of the five core areas, and about 30% indicated that they focused on activities that dealt with the cross-cutting areas. Of the core areas, the most common area to report was epidemiology, followed by health policy and management and social and behavioral sciences. Environmental health and biostatistics, predictably, if you were a better, were the least frequent areas for which people were gaining CE credits. Public health biology, I was surprised, is about one out of five activities in the cross-cutting disciplines indicated that they were working in public health biology. Leadership and professionalism and program planning and communications and information were all about the same level. Systems thinking, and I have trouble thinking about what that actually refers to, was addressed by about 6% of the respondents. These are the sources of the CE credits that were generated. National Board of Public Health Examiners was responsible for about 39 individuals receiving credit. That's largely through that webinar. Association of Public Health was the next most common, followed by the Association of Schools of Public Health. Some of our other core partners really have been reticent. Association for Prevention, Teaching, Research, and HO and ASTO have not been the source of any CE. And I got about three. And Sophie was responsible for about 24 activities reported. CDC, on the flip side in terms of organizations, was a very common source for people tapping into continuing education opportunities. So let me tell you a little bit now about maintenance of certification that's occurring. And I think it's worth noting that the pool of people seeking CE credits is going to continue to accumulate. We had about 570 now. The 2011-13 period is going to contribute another 500. And then the 2012-14 is going to contribute another 700. So you can see it's going to keep incrementing. Pretty soon we're going to be really dealing in pretty substantial numbers of people seeking maintenance of certification. The board has now established an electronic portal for individuals to report online rather than a paper-pencil kind of activity. It'll make the review of these documents much easier. It will make the tabulation of the information much easier as well. In the maintenance of certification, it will also be able to identify places where you can find credits and providers so that if somebody is interested in providing CE services, they can report to the national board and the opportunities, dates, and times, and content can be listed there. So individuals seeking to get CE credits can come to us and we can send them to you. These are the pre-approved providers. Pre-approved providers mean that you can offer a service and the National Board of Public Health Examiners will presume it has met the conditions for CE credits. These pre-approved providers have made a modest monetary payment for that privilege, and then they can extend it to their membership. And so as organizations, I'm the representative of APTR. It represents an opportunity to serve that population. These are other pre-approved providers that are out there. And so this is a very quick summary of what people are doing to maintain their credential. And again, another invitation for institutions and organizations to come forward, identify those CE activities that you're probably already involved in, and make it possible for individuals to maintain their credential as a CPH. So thanks very much. Whatever. Yeah. Questions?
Yeah.
I'm part of the 2008 cohort.
Yeah.
Are you then saying that there were some of those who took exams with me did not submit anything?
Yes. There are about 20%, less than 20%. It's 80. Molly would know the exact percentage, I think. It's 80 something who have submitted materials for CE, and the remainder have yet to do so.
That means they had things.
They may lose their certification. Right. There is a procedure in place to grant them an extension, but it's not indefinite. And after the extension period, if requested, they would lose their credential.
Okay. Thank you.
So I have kind of three questions in one. I'm responsible for creating a course to prepare students to take the exam. And some of the feedback I'm getting is that they're not worried about taking the exam, but the maintenance of everything they have to do to maintain their certification is much higher than they expected, and higher than some of the other professions, the veteran medicine and some of these others. Is there any talk about reducing that level?
The 50 credits in 2 years?
Yeah.
There is not any talk about it. In fact, the talk had gone in the other direction, about 50 is too few. It should be larger than that. And we've agreed at 50 credits. And again, it's 50 and 4 the first time out. It's 50 and 2 every time after that. Although, you're really not expected to be amassing credits that first 2 years after the exam. But, you know, you've got plenty of options and opportunities. So, it's considered to be consistent. Molly, you might have more experience with other organizations. We thought it was, in fact, consistent with the kinds of groups we were talking to.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. The board benchmarked other disciplines, so CHES and MCHES and physicians and other national standards through licensure and certifications. And the 50 hours every 2 years, if you want to think of it 25 every year, is right in the same ballpark as every other professional discipline. And as David mentioned, the array of activities, whether it's webinar participation or presenting, hand washing at your Ministry of Health during flu season, reading articles, publishing articles, attending a conference, being a lecturer to your state of
village,
mentoring, fellowship, dissertation. There are other CPAs here that can speak to the real or perceived burden of getting the hours. Most folks that I've talked to in my position with the board had hours to spare.
So one other question related, is, you know, we're still trying to convince people that this is a worthwhile thing to do, to get this credential. We're trying to convince faculty, and we're trying to convince, you know, students. One of the things that was talked about a number of years ago is that at some point maybe organizations like CDC would tie funding to being able to have somebody that's credentialed working on the variants, things like that. Is that still being talked about? Is that a direction that's maybe?
I don't know if it's actively discussed at the moment. I think that there had been a lot of impetus to get CDC to make these kinds of recognitions. And there are other sort of minor activities. For example, the ASVH employment site indicates whether a CPH is desired, required. And so as this thing moves through its voluntary phases, we think some of these end users will pick up on it. But I don't know whether or not we're actively courting CDC in the way we had been the last couple of years. And the issue has basically been one of putting another sort of mandate, in a sense, on these organizations to pay for the certification of individuals with whom they're working with.
Okay.
Yes.
Question, do you see job description starting to reflect preference for a CPH holder?
There are some, but it's certainly not the rule at this point. There are a number of positions, particularly in the public health workforce, certainly not in the academics, but in the in the workforce that indicate a CPH is desired or preferred, but not required.